If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used. Because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
It's all here.
A no-hitter. Grand slam.
Have all the fun you want.
Every moment. Every game.
Make sure you guys tune in.
Catch the White Sox only on NBC Sports Chicago.
Welcome to the Blackhawks Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. I am Pat Boyle, joined by Charlie Romeliotis. And on this episode, it's all about your email or social media questions about your favorite hockey team. Will the Blackhawks add a veteran goalie to push Kevin Lankinen? Any chance the Hawks have a shot to get Jack Eichel? Do you see the Hawks entertaining a Dylan Strome trade? Any updates on Jonathan Toews? And we talk press box food at the United Center. It's your questions all coming up on the Blackhawks Talk Podcast.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
All right, Charlie, this podcast is all about the listener. We're checking out their email, their social media questions, and let's get things going here with Jen B. She says, goaltending, will they add a veteran to push Kevin Lankinen? Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the interesting part about this question is the fact that they have so many young guys that are tied up under contract right now with Colin Delia and Kevin Lankinen and Malcolm Subban and recently signed Arvid Soderblom. So there are four guys under contract. And if they do want to bring in a veteran to push Kevin Lankinen, I don't know how you're going to make the puzzle pieces fit unless guys are getting shipped out, because there isn't going to be a taxi squad for the upcoming season. So it's not like you can stash a Colin Delia or Malcolm Subban in Rockford without having to go through some sort of waivers. So by all indications, it seems like they're going to roll back Lankinen and Subban and potentially Delia as well. Figure out how that waiver situation is going to work, because they might have to carry three goaltenders to fit them under the roster. But unless the Seattle expansion draft changes something where the Kraken take a goaltender for whatever reason from off their hands, then I can see them maybe looking externally, but I just don't know how the puzzle pieces could fit if they add someone externally.
I think we both agreed that Kevin Lankinen had a really solid year, awfully got off to that tremendous start, then hit a little bit of a wall and seemed to rebound a bit at the end of the season. Again, that was 56 games. Now we're playing 82, little more time between games. It won't be quite as hectic as it was in the truncated season. So, you know, do I think you can win a cup with Lankinen, with Delia, or with Subban? My thought would be probably not. Like right now, the body work I've seen so far isn't enough to say, yeah, that guy, we can ride to the end. Especially when I look at the goaltending that continues to advance in the Stanley Cup playoffs, not only this season, but in years past. And then the list of like UFAs is not overly impressive. It starts with, you know, Pekka Rinne and Tuukka Rask. I assume they're going to stay put or they're going to, you know, come to some sort of terms with Boston and Nashville. But the one goalie that intrigued me on the list was Florida's Chris Drieger, because he's only 27. Had a great year for the Panthers. He had a 2.07 goals against, a 927 save percentage. He was better than Bobrovsky. They went to him in the playoffs. And then you've got Spencer Knight, who they also went to, and you know, he's the future. He's only 20. So I don't know what the plans are. Like, I don't see him being your backup, because you'd probably want your backup getting, especially at 20, 21 years of age, getting more action. So I think that's interesting. Like, how are you going to – Bobrovsky's obviously underperformed at $10 million cap hit per year. He's still got 5 years left to go on that deal. So do they try to move Bobrovsky, eat half of that salary, and try to, you know, give – a team, a two-time Vezina Trophy winner for $5 million. I mean, that you may have to go down that road. Do you think they're going to, it's a fait accompli that Florida brings back Driedger?
I don't think so. I don't think he's going to be back. I think what Florida is going to do is they're going to go with Bobrovsky and Spencer Knight as their two goaltenders and just play out the rest of the entry-level contract for Spencer Knight. Kind of offset. I know it's not ideal to have probably, because Spencer Knight is certainly going to take over the number one job in the very near future. And so it's not ideal having a $10 million backup, but I think they can get away with it playing the rest of Spencer Knight's entry-level contract. And then when he's due that second contract, then you have to find a way to move Bobrovsky, whether you have to eat some salary over the last two or three years of it. But with Chris Driedger, the interesting part of this equation is Seattle. Like, he's most likely going to be exposed in the expansion draft by Florida. And so if Seattle doesn't take him, then Florida has a situation on their hands where they can let him walk, or they can potentially trade his rights. And so I think it would be difficult. I don't know how Florida would just let him walk to free agency. Like, I think they would try to get something for him, because they purposely held on to him ahead of the trade deadline this year because he was the top guy in Florida.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, if there was some way that the Hawks could go after him, if somehow he wasn't selected by Seattle, or, you know, he was the one guy that jumped off that page, that group, because of his age, because, you know, he's probably, I don't know what, I mean, he's coming off his entry level deal. So I don't even know what type of number he would be looking for, what the ballpark would be, but I don't think it would break the bank. And I think it would be an upgrade from the current situation that you have.
Yeah, and it's a potential long-term fit too. Like, you can sign him to get a long contract on the open market. Like, it's still a small sample size for him. So it could potentially be an option, obviously, given the work. But I agree, Pat, that's really the only one name that really jumps out of the screen when you're looking at the free agents.
All right, next question comes from Tom Quinn. Any chance the Hawks have a shot to get Jack Eichel? And then the question is, would Doc, Strom, and our first-round pick be enough, or would it be too much? Well, first of all, this Buffalo Eichel situation is still needs to be resolved, the medical dispute. You know, he's dealing with a herniated disc. Eichel wants to have surgery. Buffalo did not want him to have surgery. So wherever he ends up, that medical staff is going to have determined the course of action and you know, the likelihood of him returning to all-star form post-herniated disc. So that's a lot of moving parts. Do they have a shot? I would say it's highly unlikely. I mean, we're certainly not hearing them as the teams that are in the running for Eichel.
Right. I will say if the Blackhawks to give up a big, if they were able to attach a big package to a potential big name player, like Jack Eichel is a guy that would fit the bill because he's only 24 years old, right? It's not like there's a pending UFA and he's going to be 27 and maybe by when he turns 30, then he's a guy that you're going to get some really good prime years. I just don't think the Blackhawks have I just don't think they have the ammo to compete with some of these other teams. Like, Pierre LeBrun of The Athletic reported on Wednesday that Buffalo, it sounds like they want to move Eichel before the NHL draft because they want to get a high first round pick this year. And he mentioned six teams, and three of the teams jumped out at me was Los Angeles, because they have such a high end prospect pool. But if you're looking at Columbus, That's a team that lost Pierre-Luc Dubois, and they are desperately looking for a number one. They have three first-round picks this year, including the number five overall selection. So the Blackhawks can't compete with that. I mean, they're picking number 12 overall, and then they would have to attach, you know, like Tom said, a Kirby Dach or an Adam Boqvist or some really key pieces. And so I just don't think it makes sense for the Blackhawks, especially given the salary also that Jack Eichel is making, to add that onto the equation would be pretty difficult.
Yeah, the teams that we're hearing, besides the Kings that you mentioned and the Blue Jackets, you got the Rangers, the Flyers seem to be in any kind of rumor mill that's out there, the Wild and the Ducks. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out in Buffalo and with Eichel. Here's the next question from HawksFan12. Will the Hawks add an outside D-man and an outside scoring forward to fill the glaring holes? I'll start there. I would just say we have both said we would like to see them add, you know, a top one or a top two defenseman. We've mentioned on this podcast that, you know, I would be in the running for Seth Jones, seeing what it would take to bring him here. I would like to know what Dougie Hamilton is asking for on the open market. I thought it was interesting that, you know, Carolina made Dougie their long-term extension offer, and now they're allowing his representatives to kind of shop his services around the league to find out if indeed Carolina's offer is the best offer out there. So that's an interesting tactic. You don't see many teams do that with star players. So I'd like to know just what dollar figure do you think it will take to land Hamilton?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say in this at least $7 million, I think. Right. And I think that's what his, you know, he's obviously been up for all of these scoring titles among the defensemen. And so I think the one thing for him is that he was having a Norris Trophy year, I want to say the year prior, and then he got hurt midway through the season, but he was running away with the points and all that. So I think that dollar is going to be at least seven, probably eight. And so if that's the case, if you're adding on that 8-year deal, if it is going to be a sign and trade, that would be difficult for the Blackhawks to swing. But if he does hit the open market, then I believe it's just going to be a bidding war for his services.
And then, you know, the question of adding a forward, I think they have a surplus of forwards right now, and they've got a lot of question marks, you know, attached to guys that they've either acquired recently, drafted recently. And so, I mean, I look at the group of Gaudet, Bjorkstrom, Nylander coming back from surgery, and Reichel. You know, Reichel has jumped from being maybe 2 years out to possibly be knocking on the door next year. So I think they're looking for the addition to their forward core from within the organization that they've already acquired. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I do think if they do go externally and do add a forward or two, it's going to be someone like a Matthias Janmark type player from last year, where it's a short-term deal. If the Blackhawks are out of the playoff hunt around the trade deadline, flip a player for draft picks and prospects, and then you elevate some of the internal guys to compete for those roles. So yeah, I don't expect them to be a big game hunter as far as the forwards go, but I do think they could add a potential depth player to just kind of sprinkle in there, and then you flip them to recoup assets if they're not in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's a great point about Janmark. Any player that has sort of edge to their game that the Hawks look at and say, you know what, we don't have enough Brandon Hagels right now. We need to kind of add to that equation. I could see them going out there and looking for a player on a short-term deal. And by the way, we were texting while we were watching Montreal and Vegas play. Janmark has been a great pickup for Vegas, as we all expected he would. I still like the deal from the Hawks' perspective, because mm-hmm. I like what they got in return for Janmark. I thought they got a lot back. And, you know, you can say, would Janmark have pushed them into the playoffs? I mean, did you see Did you see Vinny Hinostroza having 9 or 10 or 11 points down the stretch? You know, like, so like if you say Janmark, you know, would have had this spot, and, you know, he only had 1 point his last 10 games with the Hawks. You know, the guys that filled his spots in the lineup, they also produced. So I don't think that was the reason why, like, the Hawks, you know, didn't get that four spot in the end.
Yeah, not at all. It was a win-win for the Hawks. They yeah, like you said, they basically subtracted Janmark and replaced him with Hinostroza, and there was zero drop at all. And the Blackhawks had upgraded their second to a second round pick. So that was a nice deal. And Janmark has been really good for Vegas as far as just the role that he's playing there, right? Like, on the Blackhawks, he's playing heavy minutes, you know, power play time. That's fine. But with Vegas, you're playing in like a third line or middle six role, and you're getting some really good matchups. So yeah, again, that's going to be an interesting case when he does hit the free agent market as well with Janmark.
And back to the initial question about, you know, addition. And I one thing, when you watch these playoffs and these final four teams, how deep their defensive core are and how versatile they are. They've got scorers, they've got shot blockers, they've got the physical defensemen, they've got the playmaking defensemen. That's why when I look at the Mitchells and the Bodans and the Boquists, and, you know, I see, you know, I see a lot of talent, a lot of potential, but I do think adding a veteran to that mix. I had mentioned Alec Martinez on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. I know he doesn't fit in the age timeline for kind of where the Hawks are at, adding a guy in his mid 30s. But I do think at a 1 or a 2 year deal, if he was willing to do that and to groom some of these young guys and to be able to score, you know, big goals and to be able to, you know, take care of the top power play unit and kind of help elevate this entire decor, I would love to see something like that to kind of help expedite this, this blue line core that the Hawks have assembled.
Yeah, the challenging part about the Blackhawks situation now versus years ago when they were competing for a Stanley Cup is those veteran guys would have come to Chicago to take less money to win, right? Now they're in sort of a rebuilding phase, and it's like you kind of have to pay them more money
yep.
to get them to Chicago. And that's where it gets a little bit tricky, especially for guys like, you know, when they're 34, 35 years old, where they want to go somewhere to win a cup. Usually they're going to those places, those rebuilding teams, you know, just to kind of maximize their money, but also, you know, other teams weren't exactly biting. And so they just kind of chased that next opportunity. So that's where it's difficult to kind of lure on Alec Martinez, especially given the playoff that he's having right now.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. Like you said, in years past, players that would take short-term deals were looking, they're chasing rings. I mean, the good thing about Alex is he's got his rings. He's a Michigan guy. I don't know if there's any interest to get back closer to Michigan, but I'm with you. This is a different scenario. You almost have to, you know, persuade and make it, you know, a reason for them to come to you, where the team just kind of sold itself because you're playing with all these future Hall of Famers and the cups were just coming left and right, and you were coming here chasing a ring. That obviously isn't the case right now. Speaking of the Final Four in the Stanley Cup playoffs, as we tape this podcast, both series are 1-1. PointsBet has the Golden Knights as the favorite at plus 130. Tampa Bay next at plus 180. The Islanders plus 550. How about the value of Montreal? Plus 850. If you got a little loose change around the house, I mean, that you're sitting at a 1-1 series and Carey Price in net, and that Montreal team, you know, as talented as Vegas is, I like that value at plus 850.
So, Pat, before the season started, I like to look at the Stanley Cup odds and throw a little dough on a team that I think could, you know, just maybe there's value there that could make a run. I threw $10 on Montreal to win the Stanley Cup. So
wow.
I have something on the line here. I don't think it's going to come to fruition, but I like my team I picked before the year is in the Final Four. But listen.
What were the odds? What were the odds before the season?
I think it was like, I think it's like the payout is like 270 or something. So
okay,
it's not crazy, but it was a fun little bet that I thought here's the thing about Montreal and before the season too, is they were built for the postseason. Like their challenge was going to be if they could get out of the regular season, because they have all those playoff type players. When we're watching, it's the Brendan Gallagher's, the Tyler Toffoli's, Shea Weber's, not guys that are sexy names, but in the playoffs, those are the guys that you want in the trenches. And so I think that's, and by the way, former Blackhawk Eric Gustafson is still in the Final Four, which is hilarious to me, because every time he's on the ice, I'm just like, he's wearing this weird number 32. It's not even his typical 50 number. So it's just like, it looks funny, but kudos to Eric Gustafson for playing deep.
I'm a Gustafson fan. I liked him when he was here. I know he's got his limitations defensively, but I like what he brings to the table. Philip Deneau is also that's when you're watching Montreal play, you're shaking your head, realizing that he was once a property of the Chicago Blackhawks. Yeah, that's one you'd like to have a redo on. He would fit in perfectly with this team right now. The other thing that jumps off, and I love what Cole Caulfield brought to Montreal down the stretch of the regular season. And then when the playoffs started and they didn't have him in the lineup, I'm like, are you out of your freaking mind? And ever since he's been inserted, he's just, this guy's going to be a star. I mean, I just love so much about him. And memo to the National Hockey League, if you want to see this fan base grow, you have to do what our friends north of the border did. Caulfield obviously went to Wisconsin. J.J. Watt is not only a huge Wisconsin Badger fan, being a former Badger, he's a huge hockey fan. He played AAA hockey. The guy's got some hockey skills. Our friends north of the border, David Amber, Elliot Friedman, and Sportsnet had J.J. Watt on between periods last night talking about his fandom for Cole Caulfield. That's the kind of thing that NBC, TBS, Turner, and ESPN, they need to do. These are things you need to put these great players in a position where they can show personality. They can cross promote with the most popular league going right now in North America, the National Football League. So those are things you need to do. Cole Caulfield is a perfect candidate to be ushered into that arena.
Yeah, absolutely. They need to feed into that cross promotion. And I think the cool thing about this is it's not like Cole Caulfield is some superstar yet. Like
right.
in a few years, he's going to be a legit one of the, he's going to be up for, I mean, you're going to look at Alex DeBrincat now, and he's always near the top in the goals. Cole Caulfield is going to be right there. So I think that the fact that you can kind of feed into his stardom right now is great. And it's awesome because J.J. Watt is a huge hockey fan. He's been tweeting every single night when there's playoff hockey. And I think ESPN and TNT should definitely feed into that as when those all of those networks or all of those sports are on the same network.
By the way, PointsBet for the Conn Smythe future odds has Marc-Andre Fleury, the favorite, at plus 250, followed by Vasilevsky at plus 350. Kucherov at plus 400, Varlamov at plus 800, Braden Point, who again is having another fantastic postseason for Tampa, he's at plus 900. So a lot of goalies in the top five, which brings us to our next question. It comes from Tyler D. Tyler wants to know, do you see the Hawks thinking about taking a goalie like Sebastian Kosa or Jesper Wallstedt with their first round pick? They seem to really like Askarov last year. If so, which goalie has the upper hand? Let you tackle that one to start.
So I remember, I believe Blackhawks TV did a really cool, they do this every year with the draft where they mic up Stan Bowman and they show some behind the scenes footage. And I want to say that the Blackhawks called Nashville for that number 11 overall pick. And Nashville said, if it's the goalie, you got to raise your offer, because Nashville took Askarov, and I'm sure the Blackhawks were were definitely poking around and they wanted Askarov as well. I think the thing that was really, I think Askarov was a really hyped prospect and had been for several years now. And I think his path to the NHL is going to be quicker than Kosa and Wallstedt. Wallstedt, I've seen a lot of projections where he's going to go to Detroit at number 6. And so I don't even know if he's going to be there for the Blackhawks at number 12. But if he is, if Wallstedt is there, because I did see another mock draft that had him past 12, I would be curious to see if the Blackhawks do take a goalie. I know they took Drew Comesso in the second round last year. I think the wild card for me is Arvid Soderblom, who they just signed. Like, I looked at his numbers, and this guy looks like a legit, like, he could be, there's some serious potential there. And I want to say almost every single NHL team was in on this goalie, and he signed with the Blackhawks. So if there's high-end potential there, similar to when the Blackhawks, you know, had Antti Niemi years ago, and he was kind of just in the background, and then he just emerged as this starting goaltender, I think that could play a potential role if one of the guys like Lankinen and Subban don't pan out. But you know, who knows? Like, if there's a goalie there at sitting at number 12, and they feel like that he could be a potential building block for this team moving forward, you know, maybe you consider it. I think it made more sense last year, though, because you figured the timeline was going to match up to when the Blackhawks were going to start being in contention again. And so maybe a year later, maybe if you're not as sold on some of these goaltenders, it might be tricky, but we'll see.
You know, I was looking at the central scouting reports, both the European skaters, European goalies, North American skaters and goalies. So Wallstedt is he, from what you're hearing, the only first round goalie that is expected to be taken? Like Kosa is more, is he late first round, early second?
Yeah, later first round for Kosa and Wallstedt. I mean, he can go anywhere from top 6 to top 15.
Yeah, and I'm with you. Detroit, with a plethora of picks, you're hearing that they may be in the running for the Swedish goalie Wallstedt. I love Kosa's number. I mean, 6'6". And again, it's not always, you know, the telltale sign of a great goaltending, but like when you look at Lankinen and who they have listed at 6'2", I think he's probably more 6'1"-ish. If you think, you know, when the goalie is down, that you're getting 5 more inches, those shoulders are raised 5 more inches. Think of how much more space is being taken up from that net. And again, you can't put enough emphasis on the value of a goaltender. You look at the teams that are still playing, they're all getting outstanding goaltending, guys that are in the Vezina Trophy conversation or already have them in their trophy case. So, you know, help me out on Comesso. He ended up being part of Team USA in the Worlds. Did he see any action, or did he just was a backup, right?
Yeah, he was just there. Yeah, he was a backup. I think he got added to the roster a little bit late.
Right.
But like the things now with goalies, we've seen their path take, it's such a long time to get to the NHL, but we're kind of seeing recently that some of those higher end goaltenders are making it to the NHL quicker than normal, such as Carter Hart in Philadelphia and then Spencer Knight in Florida, who got drafted in the first round 2 years ago. And now it looks like he's going to be the full-time starter, you know, within 2-3 years of him being drafted. So maybe it's not as, you know, like obviously what we can compare it to, it was, is Corey Crawford when he got drafted in the second round, and I want to say it was 2004, and he didn't become the full-time starter until 2011. So it took 6 to 7 years. And Drew Comesso last year, obviously got drafted in the second round. So like that could be a potential longer path, but if you're drafting those goalies in the first round, it doesn't seem as like their path is as long as it used to be.
Tyler D also asked, do you see the Hawks entertaining a Dylan Strome trade to a center needy team with the Hawks having depth at center, would allow another spot to open up on the expansion list? What do you think a return for Strome would be at this point in his career? Charlie, I could see Strome possibly in a package deal. I don't see him being a one-for-one deal. I don't think his market value is high enough right now to command much for, you know, a former number three pick overall. But if for some reason you needed to get cap space, or you wanted to put something together for a Seth Jones package or something, I could see him being included in a multifaceted deal.
Yeah, I don't know exactly if you would be getting a ton for Strome by himself, like, you know, a draft pick or prospect, whatever. I think it would have to be as part of a larger package. I think with Blackhawks, what they're thinking with Dylan Strome, like, it just feels like more and more like his long-term spot on the roster is at the wing position. And if it's not going to be at the center position, it's really hard for the Blackhawks to commit to him long-term, because they have Jonathan Toews and Kirby Dach, and Strome is just going to be sitting in that third line center role. But it's not really the best role for him, because he needs to be playing with high-end talent for him to really flourish. So if he can make that transition full-time or closer to full-time at wing, and he can play in more of a top six role on the wing, that would be better suited for him rather than playing in the third line center role and being in a sheltered role and not playing with the elite players like Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat, who he thrives with. So I don't think the Blackhawks are necessarily shopping Dylan Strome, but I do think they would be listening to what could be out there if packages are thrown around.
David wants to know, with how great some of the younger players were this past season for the Hawks, are you concerned about the Blackhawks staying under the caps, since players like Suter, Hagel, and Hinostroza are due new deals? Hawks are in pretty good shape when it comes to the salary cap. I don't have a lot of concerns at all with the restricted free agents that they want to bring back. I don't think it's going to break the bank.
Yeah, I agree. And even when you get down to those 2-3 years when Kirby Dach and Adam Boqvist and even, you know, Alex DeBrincat, when his, well, I guess his coincides with Kane and Toews. So like in the 2-3 year range, when those guys are due new deals, I mean, I don't think they're going to break the bank. Like I believe the Blackhawks are still going to be in good position, especially with Andrew Shaw on long-term injured reserve and Brent Seabrook's contract on LTIR, and Kane and Toews are obviously making $10.5 million. And when those contracts expire as well with Alex DeBrincat, you know, the number's not going to be 10.5 for the both of them again. Right. So like there is going to be some flexibility. And even when DeBrincat is due a new contract, it would be hard for me to see him getting 10.5 as well, given the financial climate of the flat salary cap, because we're going to see a lot of these higher end numbers probably come down a little bit to get the teams under. So the Blackhawks are set up pretty nicely financially over the coming year. So I don't really have a concern with that.
You knew we were going to get this question. Ty Carpenter. I actually got this question in St. Lucia, sitting at one of those like hibachi type tables, family sitting to my right from Chicago, asking me this exact question. Any updates on Jonathan Toews?
I'm shocked that that's the first question. I was actually at a dinner with family over the weekend, and several of these older family members are big Blackhawks fans, and that was the question I would get. Is Jonathan Toews going to be back next year? Is he okay? And by all indications, like the Blackhawks are expecting him back unless he tells them otherwise, right? And so I think that's the encouraging news, and even going back to the Darren Drager report during the year, if he was progressing on that path, you know, all signs point to Toews coming back. And so I would be surprised if he's not in the lineup next season. Why are you smiling, Pat?
Because here's the thing. I'm like seeing ghosts now. We've talked so much about Johnny over the last several months. I'm going to peel back the curtain here on my trip. So we land in St. Lucia. We're going through immigration, and in line, I look over and I see a guy who's about Toews height. You know, he's wearing a mask. He had a beard underneath it, but from the top of his mask to the top of the brim of his cap, it looked like Toews. I turned to my wife. I'm like, is that Johnny? Is that Toews? And I'm like thinking like, get away, unplug, stop talking about the Toews situation. He is not in the Caribbean. you'll have that conversation at a hibachi table or whatever in a couple of days. But yeah, I'm laughing because I'm literally seeing ghosts when it comes to this topic.
God, that is my, I don't want to say that's my worst nightmare, but do you remember a few years, I think it was the year after the Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup, Jonathan Toews was in like Peru or something.
Yes.
Right? And a
Machu Picchu. Yeah.
Yeah. And a Blackhawks fan came up to him and recognized it. Like
wearing a, like a Blackhawks sweater.
Yes.
Or t-shirt or something.
Yes. One of my nightmares is like, I'm on an island in Greece visiting family and I'm on a beach and a Blackhawks fan comes up to me and it just throws me through a loop and starts asking me questions. And I'm just like, my brain isn't on hockey right now. So.
No. So like, and that's the thing, knowing Toews likes to travel so much, like that is his big thing. He travels a lot in the off season. So I didn't think it would be out of character to see him somewhere on an island. But here's the thing. I can't see the Hawks reporting to training camp without clarity to this issue. Okay. We are not going to have, Ty Carpenter's question and your relative's question and the guy at the gas station and the person checking you out at Mariano's. Like, it's got to, the madness has to end. Somebody, namely, and again, it's going to be on Johnny's terms, but somebody is going to say, look, here is the deal. We are playing. We are not playing. This is why. This is it. And like, and kind of end this madness, because I don't think it's doing anybody any good with the constant speculation.
Yeah, no, I absolutely believe that we're going to get some clarity on the situation before next season starts. Like, I don't think they're going to go into next year and there's still going to be a cloud hanging over this situation. I think we are going to get clarity one way or another as this season approaches. And again, like, I would be surprised if Toews wasn't at training camp next season, because all signs point to him progressing on the path of him being ready to go.
Time now for our cold brew check presented by Dunkin. I'm sipping on my cold brew from Dunkin right about now. And this is a question that's appropriate. Nate wants to know, what's the best press box food at the United Center? You are, well, you know, usually in a press box at the United Center. You were there in their makeshift press box last year under COVID-19 restrictions. So I'll turn to you, because they usually have a pretty good spread in that second intermission.
Yeah, so I will say the two things that I really missed about this Black going to games at the United Center this season. One, obviously the fans in the building and having that roar inside the United Center. And two, is how the Blackhawks spoiled us with their press box food. And it is some of the best. You talk to some of the visiting traveling media, and they say Chicago does it better than any other organization. And I think, so my favorite, I don't know if this is kind of cheating, but every once in a while, they'll drop in some Gibson sliders. And I mean, that's like, if we're talking about a first-class organization, I've gone to some arenas where all they have is pretzels and chips and there's right. No meal. I mean, the Blackhawks are spoiling us at the press box food. So I would say that, but I mean, you can go in so many different directions, because they just, every other game it's different. And it's like, oh man, like, what are we going to get this time?
And so, it's well-rounded too. They've got a salad, you know, they got your vegetable, they've got your protein, they'll have a pasta, they'll throw in a slider here and there. But yeah, like it's a variety of stuff and it's different all the time. So here's my question. Who of the Blackhawks beat writers is that first person in line, that aggressive one who's going back for seconds? I'm guessing that it's like a Johnny Dietz, who's a real thin guy, but like he's the type of guy, because he's always on Twitter, he's always looking for the cheap best round ever at a golf course that's hosted the U.S. Open or something. So I'm thinking that guy starves himself all day. He is elbowing Powers and Laz and Tracy Myers and Ben Pope and you. And he is, hey, Kyle, Kermit D. Frank here, getting right to the front of that line, and he is throwing down food. Am I right on that, or is it somebody else?
So I will say this. In my seat in the press box, I sit in the second row, and my seat is literally the last row to like, so like I take a right and the stairs are right there and I can dart out. this is a, I don't want to say it's a tradition, but every, after the second period is when they serve the, these meals. And it's always a race first to the line between me and Edzo.
And really,
and because Edzo was one of the first guys. I mean, he darts out of there because if you're late by like 5 seconds, that line is out the door through the bathroom. But if you're one of the first ones there, you fly through, you can eat your meal and you'll be done with your meal. Go throw away your meal. And the people that were 3 minutes late are at the end of the line still. So I will say it's always a competition between me and Edzo. We literally run to the front of the line. I usually have to turn the corner because Edzo comes flying around and I need to make sure that he doesn't trample over me. But I will say, so it's a competition every time between me and Edzo for first.
Okay, that makes perfect sense because as someone who follows you on Twitter and you're on top of this, at the end of every period, you post natural stat tricks, high danger chances, 5-on-5, scoring chances, and shots on goal. Your first intermission, you are quick with that tweet. Your second intermission update takes a little bit longer. So that might be a Charlie Romeliotis refueling and you're eating your meal. And therefore guys like me who are relying on your information to help make a damn good NBC Sports Chicago intermission segment, I'm taking a back seat to you and Edzo getting to the front of the line.
Yep. If it's a little bit delayed, you know that Charlie was about 30 seconds late to the food line and he's in the middle of the line. And that tweet is coming down late.
So look, I don't know if you saw this. This came to my emails from Wallet Hub study. They said Chicago is the 2021's ninth best city for hockey fans. So to determine the best places for hockey spectators, Wallet Hub compared 73 U.S. cities based on two divisional categories, professional and college hockey, across 21 key metrics. The data set ranges from the performance level of the city's teams to minimum season ticket prices to stadium capacity. So hockey fandom in Chicago, one is the best, 37th is average. They have the Chicago at 21st in performance level, the NHL team. Okay, I can see that. 23rd in average ticket price for the NHL. That's better than I thought. 21st in NHL stadium capacity. That one, you're telling me there's 20 teams in the National Hockey League that have more than 22,000 seats? I find that really hard to believe.
I mean, I find that hard to believe as well, because if you go sort through the attendance list from like 2007 to 2020, every year the Blackhawks are at like 104% capacity and they are number one in the league in attendance. So I don't know how you can be number one in the league in attendance without having a higher capacity and being able to sell out that capacity at above 100%.
Yeah. And so then this is where the Blackhawks in Chicago scores really high. Third in number of NHL Stanley Cup wins, second in NHL attendance, first in NHL team franchise value, and 13th in NHL fan engagement. I am looking forward to that. Like, you know, you look at Jamie Faulkner, the new president of business operations, and it was already an amazing fan experience going to the United Center. I am really excited to see where this new group takes that fan experience and even enhances it and takes it to the next level. I mean, you look at the places that you can, we talked about the food in the press box. You've got on the concourse, Big Star, Publican, Girl and the Goat on the go. You've got all these, they keep adding to it, craft beer, craft cocktails. I think it's going to be pretty cool to see, you know, United Center 2.0, what it's like fan experience post pandemic.
Yeah, really quick. It says my internet is unstable. So if I chop out here, my, you know, Pat, it's a good question because so I when I used to travel, obviously pre-pandemic, when I traveled to different arenas, it brought me a unique perspective on what they do in between whistles and during e-touts. And some of the arenas I go to, I just put my head down and I'm working and whatever. And I'm writing my story because it's not really entertaining. With the Blackhawks, I always feel intermissions or not intermissions, but in between the whistles and during TV timeouts, that's my time to kind of like write some notes down in my, and have something on the screen that like makes me not want to write. Like I have to like, I have to look at what they're doing on the screen. And then I just forget about writing. And so I think the Blackhawks are one of the elite organizations on how they handle that in-game presentation. I'm also curious to see how that plays out next year.
Our discussion of press box food, the United Center food, and the city of Chicago being the ninth best city, at least according to Wallet Hub, for hockey fans. It was presented by Cold Brew Check, presented by Dunkin'. This postseason, be sure to grab a cold brew for game time, because where there's hockey, there's Dunkin'. All right. Thank you for all the questions you submitted. We got to all of them, or at least most of them. We'll file a couple of those away too, and get into it as we get closer to the expansion draft and whatever else is on the horizon in the NHL draft as well. Well, that is going to do it for this edition of the Blackhawks Talk podcast, presented by Coors Light. For Blackhawks insider Charlie Romeliotis, I am Pat Boyle. Thank you for listening. Thank you for rating us, and we'll catch you next time on the Blackhawks Talk podcast.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know, with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know business.